taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
You know, I say it frequently here on this program and in a lot of the talks and speeches that I give. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 10,000 times, you're probably an American voter. Because if there's one thing that seems to be constant in this universe of change, it's that the American people keep falling for the same gimmicks, the same mistakes, the same lies over and over and over again. It makes me wonder why. Why do we not learn from past mistakes? Maybe put another way, when will the American people learn that those in government don't have their best interests at heart? That there are people that are out there to game them, to gain power or money or influence. When will we stop falling for all the tricks and the machinations? When will the American people really start thinking for themselves? Hello, everybody. You've joined the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio. My name is Paul Engel. I'm glad you could join me today as we ponder the question, when will the American people learn, or will they do it at all? Well, take, for example, some of the latest news coming out that Moderna is now asking the Food and Drug Administration to authorize their vaccine, their quote-unquote vaccine, for children as young as 6 months. I want you to stop and think about that for a moment. 6 months. We have a disease, COVID-19, that has a statistical zero death rate for children under 5 years old. We have a quote-unquote vaccine that is not a vaccine. Remember, what Moderna refers to as a vaccine, the FDA literally tried to reinvent the definition of vaccine so that they could call it a vaccine, but it doesn't meet the legal definition of a vaccine. It does meet the legal definition of an experimental drug. The mRNA technology, it's new. It's experimental. And now, this company is looking for authorization to give this experimental drug for children that have a statistical zero chance of dying from the disease. Why are we letting a pharmaceutical company experiment on our children? And you're talking about 6 months old, half a year. They have lived so little of their lives. There's so much of their body is changing, and we want to experiment on them. Now, am I surprised that Moderna is asking for this? No. Moderna wants to sell more vaccines, and the federal government is buying them up as fast as Moderna can make them. So if they can expand their pool of people the federal government can buy for, hey, that makes them more money. The executives get rich, they get their golden parachutes, and all the trouble and all the consequences, that will be dealt with by probably somebody else. But that's the people running Moderna. Let me ask you, parents, would you give an experimental drug to your six-month-old? Friends of ours just had a baby. A little girl, she's actually only about 6 weeks old. And I can't imagine them actually putting a substance without proper testing into her body. Seeing this little girl, 6 weeks old, reminds me of my daughter. When my daughter was that age, I can't imagine experimenting on her for a disease she's not in danger from. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been going on for 2 solid years. We've been dealing with COVID over 2 years. We've been dealing with the vaccines over a year. Have we not learned our lesson yet? We watched, we ridicule Nazi Germany for experimenting on people, yet here we are not only experimenting on people, not only coercing adults to be medical guinea pigs, we want to authorize children, not just teenagers, not just preteens, all the way down to 6 months old. A biological product, gene therapy, that has not been fully tested. It can't have been. They haven't been. It hasn't been around long enough to know what the long-term consequences may be for this particular drug in an adult, much less a child. Are we willing to play Russian roulette with our children? Are we willing to do it to make us feel better? Are we willing to do it because some government bureaucrat says so? Because it seems we've ignored the short-term impact of many of our decisions, much less the long-term. Well, for example, there's a new study conducted by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. And guess what? They found a 25.5% increase in alcohol-related deaths in 2020 compared to 2019. See, between 1999 and 2019, the average annual increase for alcohol-related deaths was only 3.6%. Now, does it really take a statistician, does it take a rocket scientist to say, what happened in 2020 that could have impacted the abuse of alcohol? Now, this wasn't the vaccine. The vaccines didn't exist back then. So it wasn't the vaccines that did it. What could it possibly be? Now, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to give you just a little bit of conjecture. Could it be the fact that we locked people in their homes? We kicked them out of their jobs. We scared the ever-loving snot out of them. And some people turned to drugs and alcohol. And many of them died. Now, a lot of people will say, well, here's the problem. It is the problem is COVID-19. In fact, the study, which was published in the Journal of American Medical Association, discovered more adults died under the age of 65 from alcohol-related factors than from COVID-19, just by a few hundred. But in 2020, 74,408 people died from alcohol-related factors, and COVID-19 were 74,075. Maybe the fact of being told that, well, you're not critical. Your job's just not that important. You're not an essential worker, so we're going to send you home. And we're going to let you figure this out for yourself. Oh, sure, we'll start bribing you with some money here and there, but could that have had something to do with the alcohol abuse in 2020? I can't wait to see what the numbers are for 2021. See, there are consequences for our decisions. It was Santayana who said, those who refuse to learn from the past, or who refuse to learn from history, are doomed to repeat it. Are we going to see this again? Have we learned that those in government don't necessarily have your best interests in mind? I'm not saying nobody in government does. Individuals might, but bureaucracies don't. Bureaucracies are concerned with themselves. And they crave attention because attention involves grants and money. You know, if you're in a bureaucracy, If you want to get funding, the best way to do it is to make yourself indispensable. You do that by having emergencies, by having a crisis. That means we must give this bureaucracy more money. We need to. It's essential because of some really scary thing like a disease that has a 1.6% death rate. That if you're under 65 and in relatively decent health, your death rate's under 0.1%. But you see, we can make people scared and get them to do things they would never do otherwise. And then here, just as we've been coming out of the COVID panic, as the politicians have been easing their restrictions, because let's face it, they want to get reelected too. Just as things seem to be lightening up, what do we find? We've been hearing a lot, or at least I've been reading a lot, about the CDC talking about a bird flu outbreak. Now, this impacts poultry farmers, right? Because it's the birds that are dying, but they're taking a look at this because, well, you know what? This bird flu might pose a risk to humans. Now, according to a report that I've read from a CDC spokesperson, there have been absolutely zero cases of H5N1 strain being detected among people in the U.S. Zero. No rounding up, no rounding ground. There have been zero cases. And they went on to say that based on past experience with earlier H5N1 bird flu viruses and what is known about this group of viruses from existing epidemiology and genetic sequence data, CDC believes the health risk to the general public is low. So tell me, if it's low, why do we keep talking about it? Does that mean the CDC should ignore it? No, obviously you want to keep an eye out on these things. That is the role of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is to be the statistical analysis to say, okay, could this be aware, but why is it constantly in the news? Could it be after all the money the CDC has received after COVID, due to COVID-19, they're looking for their next, we'll call it biological sugar daddy. The next epidemic, the next pandemic that will justify their increased funding. Don't know. I said, could it be? Because I could certainly see where bureaucrats who are good at you know, collecting data, collecting money and padding their budgets, I could see where they would see this as a potential boon for them. And I'm not saying that everybody in the CDC is, you know, twisting their mustache and wringing their hands like some sort of, you know, caricature of an evil person. But when we're dealing with a bureaucracy, when we're dealing with the bureaucratic collective, wouldn't surprise me a bit if part of the reason why the CDC keeps bringing this up to the public is not for the, oh, those poor chicken farmers and turkey farmers and poultry farmers and duck farmers. No. Maybe it's because they want to be in the news, either because they love the attention or they love the funding. Now, my point here is not so much that the CDC is interested in grants and funding. That should be a given. The question is, will the American people realize that the CDC as a bureaucracy is not as pure as the wind-driven snow? That they don't necessarily have your individual best interest at heart, but that they're much more interested in, well, making sure a crisis doesn't go to waste. And if they don't have a crisis, well, making one look like a crisis, because they certainly did that with COVID-19. Wouldn't surprise you one little bit, they tried to do it with the new bird flu, the H5N1 bird flu. The question is, they fooled you once. Will they fool you twice? Or will they fool you over and over and over again? Now, I have to take a break. Before I do, I'd like you to check out a couple things. If you wouldn't mind, head to constitutionstudy.com so you can find all the work that I'm doing. You can ask a question. You can even have me answer it right here on the radio. You can see where I'm speaking. I'm putting together my tour dates. I've got a few conferences I'm speaking at. I'm looking for other venues to come talk to. So if you have a group or if you have an event and you think they might like to talk about the Constitution, would you go to constitutionstudy.com? You'll find the Request a Speaker tab. Click on that, and we'll see if we can make that happen. Also, I want to remind you that, yes, you can hear the Constitution Study live every weekday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, on the America Out Loud Talk Net Radio Network, heard on iHeartRadio. More importantly, you can share that information with others. Help others find the Constitution Study. Find our show page on AmericaOutloud.com. You can listen on the media player. You can listen through any of our apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. There are plenty of ways. You can find out more at AmericaOutloud.com. That is the best place to get started. And that is the best place to find links and videos and stuff you can share with others to spread these blessings of liberty. And while you're at it, we've been talking about the CDC, and one of the best things I did during COVID was make sure my immune system was strong. And one of the things I used was Immune Super Boost from Healthy Cell. It comes in an easy-to-use travel-ready gel pack. You can mix it into a drink or just take it directly. It helps boost your immune system. Again, not just against COVID, but against the flu, the cold, and the general crud you pick up when you're on the road like me or if you're dealing with the public a lot. You can go to HealthyCell.com, and they will give you 20% off your first order if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So try any of their products, put a package together. Just make sure when you check out, you use the code OUTLOUD. That way, they'll know that you listen to America Out Loud, and they'll give you 20% off your first order.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to HealthyCell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've returned to the Constitution Study. Today, we're asking the question, when will the American people learn? You know, we were told that the vaccines, the quote-unquote vaccines, the fake vaccines, well, first we were told they were vaccines, when they're not. They're gene therapy. Of course, then we were told that they were safe and effective, and we found out, well, they're not all that safe. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not like you're injecting poison into your arm, but they're not as safe as they led us to believe. They keep covering up the adverse reactions, the deaths, the illnesses. They can't cover up the fact that they haven't done all the testing they would normally do. They've tried to withhold data from us about the safety testing they went through. And we find out, well, they're not really that effective because they keep telling us we're going to need booster shots because Well, they don't stop the spread. They do tend to somewhat control the spread, sort of, kind of. They're supposed to minimize the symptoms, but now we're finding out, at least if you can believe the studies that the Israelis have been doing, this fourth booster shot, this fourth shot they're talking about, I should say, works sort of for a little while. See, what they found is in the Israeli study was that the fourth dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, it did lower rates of COVID-19 among the elderly, but only for a few weeks. See, the second booster's protection against infection dwindled after just 4 weeks. 1, 2, 3, 4. They showed their study, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Yet there are still people pushing for this fourth shot. They showed that protection against severe illness, well, that lasted a whole 6 weeks after the dose. But they admit, they said, you know, we really need more follow-up study to evaluate the long-term protection. But they still want us to be medical guinea pigs. Take the shot, take the shot. Why would we believe you? Why would we trust anything the medical industry, the so-called public health bureaucracy is telling us? I mean, how many times do we have to be lied to before we start questioning what they're telling us? And now we find out, as I said, you know, they've been cooking the books. There's just no other way of putting it. From the CDC admitting that, 90%+ early on, 90%+ of the deaths were not necessarily people who died of COVID, but died with COVID. Just a few months ago, they admitted that 75% of the deaths had four or more comorbidities, meaning they died not of COVID, but with COVID. That all those numbers that were used to scare the American people into wearing masks, locking themselves down, giving up their rights, were fraudulent. They were cooked. Then we had the state starting, you know what? We're going to start changing how we report our COVID-19 deaths. Now they're even doing, they're changing how they're reporting their COVID-19 hospitalizations. Well, for example, in New Hampshire, the state reported 7 COVID-19 hospitalizations, down from about 24 during the previous week. And when asking why, well, officials said, well, it reflected a change in the statewide reporting policy. And the state's Department of Health and Human Services says they're going to define a COVID-19 hospitalization as one who is treated with either dexamethasone or remdesivir to deal with severe to moderate to severe symptoms. But individuals who are hospitalized with milder symptoms or for any other reason but test positive for COVID, they're not going to be counted as COVID hospitalizations anymore. Oh! So we're admitting that for, what, as many as 2 years now? If you showed up to the hospital for any reason and you tested positive for COVID, you were listed as a COVID hospitalization? Yeah, that's called cooking the books. That's called adding false positives. If you have a heart attack or a stroke or you're hit by a car or, you know, you come in with any other disease and they test you and you test positive for COVID-19, they listed you as a hospitalization. Now think back to how many breathless reports we heard about hospitalization rates and how we needed to do this. We needed to lock down. We needed the masks. We needed the vaccines because of the hospitalization rate. This whole thing started with 2 weeks to flatten the curve so that we didn't overwhelm our hospitals. Now we're finding out more evidence that our hospitals were not overwhelmed, that they were cooking the books to keep the numbers up. And New Hampshire's not alone. Ohio, Arizona, Nevada, these are all states that are changing how they're reporting COVID hospitalizations to deal with the fact that we're in a phase of this scaredemic that we need better data. Now, it's funny. They say, well, we want to reflect the current phase of the what they call a pandemic. But I'm sorry, you're telling me that if the data was wrong before, if the data was misleading before, why isn't it misleading now? And vice versa. In other words, if you're changing how you're reporting, why was it right before? Why should we trust what you're reporting before? So we see that can we trust the data coming out of our state health departments? See, we were told that these quote-unquote vaccines were safe and effective, but now there's data to question it. We were told if you questioned the safety and efficacy of these quote-unquote vaccines, well, that was misinformation, disinformation, worthy of being pulled off of social media, being canceled, being shut down. But now more and more we're finding out, you know what, we had very good reason to question the efficacy, the safety of these drugs. And then this story came out. See, back in September of 2020, a researcher that was working for an organization that was testing Pfizer's vaccine emailed a complaint to the FDA. All right, so this researcher is working for going, they're testing the vaccine, and this guy is complaining. He sends an email, a complaint to the FDA informing the agency that the company's shoddy research practices are dangerous. The FDA took no action. And Pfizer continued to use that company. Now, remember, a couple weeks ago, I was talking to Dr. McCullough, and he pointed out the FDA, which is supposed to be a watchdog organization, they are supposed to be checking the safety data. They're supposed to be making sure that the proper safety information is included in the drugs that we take. They had a report, they had a complaint of shoddy research in testing the safety of a vaccine, and they ignored it. They didn't take any action. Could it be because, as Dr. McCullough told us, the FDA is one of the sponsors of the vaccine? Is the fox guarding the hen house? You see, recently the FDA authorized a second round of booster shots for people 50 and older. It wasn't until April 6th that the Vaccines and Related Biologic Products Advisory Committee met in open session to consider the use of these boosters. Now, at this meeting, it was an open meeting, a Dr. Peter Dasche, who's the Assistant Professor of Pharmaceutical Health Services at the University of Maryland, an Associate Editor at the British Medical Journal, decided to tell this particular whistleblower's story. The whistleblower, Brooke Jackson. See, in fall of 2020, Jackson was a regional director for the Venativa Research Group, the company that was conducting the Pfizer's phase three trials in Texas. Now, she told the British Medical Journal that she witnessed researchers falsifying data, unblinding trial participants, and employing inadequately trained vaccinators. She also said that the researchers were slow to follow up on adverse effects. Now, Ms. Jackson has submitted her evidence to a federal court. Now, during an interview with on Blaze TV, she said that Pfizer's clinical trials were so riddled with fraud and abuse of the scientific process, there was zero credibility. And these are the people who are submitting data to the FDA saying, yes, it is safe to use our product. Now, she has said that she witnessed participants being placed in a hallway after injection and not being monitored by clinical staff, lack of timely follow-up of patients who experience adverse effects, protocol deviations not being reported, vaccines not being stored at proper temperatures, mislabeled laboratory specimens, and targeting of Venativa staff for reporting these types of problems. Ladies and gentlemen, how long are we going to listen to these people? Remember, the FDA is supposed to be verifying the safety data. So you are informed. So your consent is informed. They are ignoring the problems in the testing because they have a benefit. They have, as the sponsors, they're getting credit. They're probably getting licensing fees for sponsoring this this product. They're supposed to be adversarial, but they're sponsoring it. Excuse me, but if you went to a baseball game and you learned that the referees all worked for one of the teams, were employed by one of the teams, therefore had a vested interest in one of the teams, would you trust their data? But that's what we're being asked to do. I wonder if that's why when Pfizer was asked to turn over their safety data, they wanted 75 years to do so. Do we still trust him? Will you trust him with another booster shot? Will you trust them the next time the next disease comes along? They come along and say, hey, H5N1 is now in humans. Here, we've got a virus, we got a vaccine for you. Are you going to trust them? Oh, it's safe and effective. Are you going to trust them? See, while there are medical consequences for what has been going on, there are social consequences as well. I believe fewer and fewer Americans are trusting our public health centers. That includes not only the CDC, FDA, NIH, etc., but includes our hospitals. It includes our doctors. I've got reports. I'm going to talk about one in the third segment of doctors committing what I consider to be malpractice in the name of the political advancement of this vaccine. Can you trust a word that they say? My wife, she had a neurologist that refused to see her anymore because she wouldn't be a medical guinea pig. This is going to have a very long-term effect on our society. Now, hopefully, one of those effects will be a lack of trust of bureaucrats. Just because they say so doesn't mean it's so. And that's not just for the quote-unquote public health bureaucrats. That should be bureaucrats as a whole. It should include, by the way, congressmen that said, yes, we have the legal authority to do this. I don't trust you. Prove it. It should be the president when he says, yes, I can issue an executive order to do this. Prove it. We need to start verifying what we're being told because we've been lied to so often. I honestly think the American people are so used to being lied to, they simply expect it and accept it. But how can I say that? Answer this simple question. How can you tell when a politician is lying? If your answer is anything other than a variation of their lips are moving, you are rare. Because every time I ask that question, the answer is always some variation of their lips are moving. We have hired people we know are lying to us. And the ones that do it best, we keep around the longest. And if we think they're doing it in politics, what makes you think they're not doing it in the bureaucracies? The bureaucracies are just as politicized as any other part of government. So why do we trust them? Maybe a better question is, if you don't trust them, what do you do? You see, it's real easy to simply point the finger and say, oh, see, those evil bureaucrats or those evil corporations or evil this or evil that, and stop to forget the fact that we're responsible for how we react to these. We're not responsible for what other people do, but we the people are responsible for how we react. Remember, we the people did ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States. We created the federal government through our states. We created those states through our drafting of the constitutions. Most of the state constitutions recognize that all power is inherent in the people. We keep forgetting that we're the ones in charge, that these people work for us. Maybe if we spent a little more time recognizing that, recognizing the limitations we've placed on government and actually enforcing those limitations, we'd have a little less issue with corrupt politicians, corrupt bureaucrats, and corrupt corporations, because although they would still exist, we'd not only be aware of it, but we could deal with it. We could act differently, knowing that what we were being told we needed to verify. Now, I want to talk a bit more about this after the break, but before I go, I want to remind you that all of my shows go to podcast typically a day or two after they're heard right here on the radio. You can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Do me a favor, though. Be sure to subscribe and rate the shows wherever you find them, especially on Apple Podcasts. But anywhere you find them, give me the thumbs up, give me the ratings, give me the 5 stars. It helps other people find the Constitution Study, where they can hear these things that hopefully you find very useful and very valuable. Also, if you're looking to study the Constitution, but you really want to do it, but you need a little bit of help, you're looking for a group of people to study with, well, check out constitutionscholars.com. I set that up specifically for people who want to be students of the Constitution to gather, to read and study, to ask questions, to debate, to be involved. You can find, again, all of that on constitutionscholars.com. You can sign up for free and explore all the communities, take several of the classes right over there, again, on constitutionscholars.com. Remember, it's not the single individual that comes up with the idea. It's our willingness to spread the seeds of liberty around. Not to hoard them for ourselves, but to share them with others. So don't just sit around. Be part of the solution by sharing these messages.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best. Freedom lies in being bold. Well, for 6 incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're asking the question, when will the American people learn? Now, I left this last segment talking about some of the stuff, the whistleblower at Pfizer, that their safety testing, their testing methodologies were flawed, were useless in the words of the whistleblower. Well, there's some more bad news for Pfizer. And it's interesting. See, I've seen 2 different articles from 2 different sources telling me that, I guess it's good news, bad news. See, Pfizer is hiring employees, which I suppose, well, it's good for the employees, right? Because someone who needed a job now maybe has a job. That's good news. And of course, if Pfizer needs employees, well, they must need them to do something. So wouldn't that be good for Pfizer as well? I mean, they're growing. They needed employees. Well, except the problem is both of these stories involve Pfizer having to hire employees because of the large number of adverse events being reported. Yeah, that's right. See, Pfizer prepared a document where it says it has taken multiple actions to help alleviate the large increase of adverse effects event reports. And this includes significant technology enhancements and process and workflow solutions, as well as increasing the number of data entry and case processing colleagues. See, they're getting so many adverse event reports that they needed to hire people to cover the workload. Now, the document was apparently from the first quarter of 2021, right? So we're talking a year ago. And that was sent to the Food and Drug Administration. And at that time, Pfizer had brought on 600 extra full-time employees just to deal with the jump. But you see, that wasn't the end of it. They're adding more and more and more people. And they expected that by the end of 21, in this document, by June of 2021, they were going to need 1,800 additional personnel simply to deal with the increase in the adverse effects. The events that were being reported for their experimental mRNA vaccine that we've been told is safe and effective. But with thousands and thousands of adverse effects being reported, needing them to increase the number of personnel just to process all those adverse effects. And this is the same company that wanted to take 75 years to provide the safety testing data that the FDA supposedly reviewed before they authorized the emergency use authorization of their vaccine. You see, this document was not originally made public. It wasn't until the group Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency sued the FDA. And the agency claimed it needed time to produce these documents. It wasn't until they were sued in federal court and the court demanded they produce documents at a reasonable rate. I think it's like 10,000 documents a month. It wasn't until then that we found out, oh yeah, they knew about the adverse effects. They knew there were going to be a large number of adverse effects. They knew they were going to need almost 2,000 people just to process all of these additional adverse effects. What does that tell you about your willingness to trust Pfizer? To trust the FDA? Guys, remember, this document went to the FDA. The FDA didn't disclose this. Why do we trust them? Because, again, there are, in many cases, life and death consequences for the decisions being made by these people. The people that so many Americans seem to have blindly put their trust in. Well, for example, the Donaldson family. Now, Tanner Donaldson needs a kidney. He's not going to live unless he gets a kidney transplant. And they found, well, it must be an almost perfect match, as I understand it, in his father, Dane, who was more than willing to give one of his kidneys so his son could live. And they found this back in early 2018, and they were at the Cleveland Clinic Children's Hospital. Now, they didn't do the transplant right away because a kidney transplant from a live donor generally lasts only about 20 years. So they wanted to push the actual transplant as far into the future so give Tanner as much time as possible. See, then COVID hit. And now, as the need for the transplant becomes more and more urgent, the hospital is refusing to perform the transplant unless the father gets vaccinated. Now, I want you to just stop and think about this. Think of it not just as a parent. Think of it as a human being. You have a child that is dying. I believe Tanner is... I think he's 9 years old now, somewhere around there. He needs this transplant. And the hospital is refusing to do it because the father, not only will the father refuse to participate in a human medical experiment, because remember, these vaccines, they aren't approved. They're still experimental. And for that, they won't perform the transplant. Now, let's remember, The vaccines do not stop the spread of the disease. They do seem to minimize hospitalizations. They do seem to decrease the transmission rate some. So it can't be a question of transmission. Besides, he's going to be in an operating room. The doctors are going to be masked. All the people in there are going to be masked. It's in a controlled environment. Does he really need to be vaccinated? You're telling me there isn't a transplant doctor that is willing to work on a non-vaccinated person? Now, here's the interesting part. You see, the Cleveland Clinic released a statement to the Epoch Times, and they cited their 2021 policy that they adopted requiring all donors and candidates for organ transplants to be fully vaccinated against the virus. Listen to their reasoning. Quoting from the statement, individuals who are actively infected with COVID-19 have a much higher rate of complications during and after surgery, even if the infection is asymptomatic. All right, let me stop for a second and say, maybe that's true. I don't know, but let me give the Cleveland Clinic the benefit of the doubt that says that is true, that they actually have medical evidence to that effect. What good's a vaccination gonna do? It has already been proven through medical studies, the vaccination doesn't stop you from catching the virus. It may keep you from getting the disease or at least having symptoms or serious symptoms, but it does not stop the body from being infected with the virus. So what in God's name is this fake vaccine gonna do about the fact of whether or not they have the virus or not? I have a brilliant idea. How about you just run a test on them and see if they've got the virus? If they don't have the virus, you go ahead with it. But you see, here's the interesting thing. The hospital requires that a living donor be vaccinated, but not a deceased one. Meaning that the father would just die. They'd be more than happy to harvest his organs for his son, but not while he's alive. I want you to think about the perversity of that statement. The perversity of saying, listen, Dad, we won't take your kidney unless you're dead. Because you won't take an experimental drug that has proven not to stop the body from getting the virus, which is what the hospital claims it's involved with. Tell me, where are the medical professionals? Where are they decrying this level of malpractice? And I'm wondering, where did the Cleveland Clinic come up with this cockamamie policy? Is it coming from some bureaucratic agency? Is it a bunch of lawyers? Where is this policy coming from? But I'm asking more. If you are a transplant surgeon, if you know a transplant surgeon that is willing to operate on an unvaccinated person, an unvaccinated living donor, I want you to contact the Cleveland Clinic and put you in contact with the Donaldson family. I don't have contact information for the Donaldson family, or I do it directly. But this is the time that we need to stop listening to these people and figuring it out for ourselves. I am not a transplant surgeon. I can do nothing to contribute to this other than make this family story known, hopefully to find someone who can help. A hospital, a clinic, doctors, nurses, that are willing to put the life of a child above the political machinations of a clinic. See, we were all told when the Affordable Care Act passed, before we even knew what was in it, that death panels were a myth. Here we have a clinic issuing a policy that is effectively telling a 9-year-old boy, We're willing to let you die because we're not willing to operate on an unvaccinated donor. When will the American people listen? When will we learn that what government touches, government ruins? Whether that's healthcare, whether it's the bureaucracy at the clinic, whether it's the fake oversight of these drug manufacturers that are producing these fake vaccines, when will the American people learn? How many times must we be punched in the face before we start putting our hands up and saying, no more? How many times must these people be exposed for the liars and hypocrites they are? How often must we see that just because somebody gets a government paycheck doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean they're ethical, doesn't mean they are pure as a wind-driven snow, doesn't mean that they are not fallen, flawed human beings? How long will we allow the lives of 9-year-old children to be endangered because we are unwilling to learn our lesson? According to the article in the Epoch Times that was published on April 5th, Tanner only has 18% function left in his kidneys. He is running out of time. The father said he's willing to sign a waiver. Okay, you're concerned about it. I don't care. This is my son. I'll sign a waiver. Doesn't matter to the clinic. Doesn't matter to the hospital. Apparently. When are we going to learn? When are we going to learn that doctors and hospitals and bureaucrats are full of people? They're just people. They make mistakes. They have agendas other than our own or other than the ones they've stated. But it's still up to us. You're familiar with the saying, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware? Well, that should be just as true of the bureaucracies as anything else. Whether it's public health, whether it's the clinics, I'm just giving you some examples of how these organizations have let us down again and again and again and again. How often are we going to buy this defective nonsense before we start deciding for ourselves that we're going to learn? We're going to verify what you say is true. We're going to hold you to account for your decisions. I don't know what else to do for Tanner and the rest of the Donaldson family. I honestly don't, other than to pray that somehow, somewhere, we find somebody who would put ethics above politics, ethics above legal liability, that would put what is right above what is approved. But while we're doing that, let us continue to learn. The Donaldsons are not the only example. This is happening across the country. Why are the American people putting up with it? Why are we not in the face of the people of the Cleveland Clinic going, you're kidding me, right? Why are we not finding other resources? Why is it so often we just sit back and go, oh, isn't that awful? Isn't that terrible? What can we possibly do? Well, the answer is to stop letting government do what it's not qualified to do and what it's not legally allowed to do. See, that's the part I think most people miss. The FDA, not legal. The Constitution does not authorize the federal government to oversee public health. Okay, their interstate commerce function saying, okay, if you're going to sell a product across interstate lines, here's how to regulate and make standards. That is okay. But the oversight and approval, there's no legal authority for that. So isn't it time the American people learned the limits of government and they began enforcing them? Now do me a favor, would you please make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for news and happenings? It's more important than ever that we do our part, that we share these stories, spread them far and wide. Help others to see that we are not helpless victims of whatever those in charge want us to be. Help spread the seeds of liberty as far and as wide as we can.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.